So I'm doing a quick Google image search, and it appears that most people who are trying to get a boss tattoo have the word boss over a heart with a knife or a sword stuck through it. Problem solved.
I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for another episode of Video Games Hot Talk, episode number 91, to be precise.
That's a lot. That's many shows.
91 was a good year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wine from 91 would probably be valuable right now.
Maybe.
And sure. We were not yet old enough to drink wine in 91.
That's true.
I bet you drank some wine in junior high. Riff the Wino, they called you. Riff the Albino.
My dark secret. My very pale dark secret.
How's it going, Riff?
It's going okay, I guess.
How's it going, Kevin?
It's going pretty good.
Well, we're off to a real bang.
Yeah.
I feel like there's extra delay for some reason. I don't know why. I'm back in Chicago.
Yeah, there is. I noticed... Between my clap and yours, a really long time passed. I think I'll probably have to drag your waveform to the left a little.
Kinky.
A little to the left is what your waveform will say.
Back into the left. Back into the left. Which is weird because it sounds like you're just right next door. I can't even tell. There's like no delay on my side. In fact, I can hear what you're saying before you say it.
Oh, that's
so maybe
crazy.
That's why there's extra delay. That's the problem.
Maybe you should just record that, and then we'll publish that, and you won't even need us. Yeah.
So the office has not yet burned down.
Yay!
Although they came out and unfixed their repair for a minute, and then some shit exploded inside the office, and then they were like,
"Yeah, now it seems good again."
Despite the guy's insistence that you shouldn't be having no problems. I didn't believe him when he said that.
Are they going to pay for all the shit that has exploded in the office?
They say they will. Yeah, they say we can file a claim for the appliances that have been destroyed. So far, that is, as we know, the washing machine was destroyed by a power surge. The wireless router was destroyed by a power surge. Wait. Did you know that when you buy a wireless router now, it comes with encryption turned on and it has a super sweet password, like a randomly generated password on it?
I didn't know that, but that makes a lot of sense given some of the passwords I've seen. Wait, so the washing machine was destroyed by the power surge?
No, there's a new password for the washing machine is what I'm saying. So when you get back here, if you want to connect to it.
Yeah, apparently whatever it is in the washing machine that makes it go from wash mode to spin mode got fried. And so it would just, it'd wash clothes, but then they just sit there in laundry soup for perpetual.
That is pretty much the worst kind of soup.
Yeah. I had to wring all the water out of an entire load of laundry to put them in the dryer, and my arms were very tired.
That's a pretty good pretty good old school joke. You should take that to vaudeville.
I've been wringing water out of my clothes all day, and boy, are my arms tired.
I just spent the entire day wringing out laundry, and the food on the plane sucked. There's nothing I like more than setting up wireless routers. You know that about me, Kevin.
Yeah, well, I think you just love interacting with technology in general, regardless of its form.
This one was trivially easy to set up. I think some of this shit they're starting to figure out. Although we are now connecting to a Wi-Fi router that's just called Netgear something.
Oh, you didn't change the name of it?
No, I didn't want to mess with it. It was working. Wow. And we had all kinds of shit to do, and we had lost an entire morning to, like, the power being all fucked up. Ugh, that fucking guy. I don't want that guy to have been right, but he was kind of right. He was like, no, it's going to be fine, and it has been fine, but he insists that what they were doing was not responsible for our lights flickering and our shit exploding. Oh, maybe you had a bad power strip. Was that power strip old? Fuck you! That's how old it was.
I don't believe them. Like, I don't believe them at all.
Yeah, me neither. Ugh, this fucking guy. And the guy that he was with just looked like if you... Like, let's say that you're a guy who just does nothing but smoke pot until you're 40, and then you're like, oh, fuck, I gotta get a job. So then you're, like, 43, but you look like, you know, a 25-year-old stoner, and you're really bad at being an electrician.
Started smoking pot at 3?
Yeah.
Dang.
You know, every once in a while, when you do a Google image search for I believe the children are the future, you'll see a picture of somebody smoking a bong that is connected to a naked woman's vagina. There's a baby in there, and that baby is super just ripping all the time.
Hotboxing.
Yeah. And, yeah, then he grows up to be an electrician. What else has happened? Oh, and then also as a result of a power surge, the hose faucet on the front of the office quit working. It was leaking electricity real fast.
Yeah.
So then I fixed it, but in fixing it, I broke a wrench and hurt my hand. So
is that why the grass is so electric green outside?
Yeah, and also that's why the hose faucet, when you turn it on, it sprays water sort of sideways instead of down. I don't know if you guys are familiar with faucets, but normally they're pointed downwards.
Mm-hmm.
This one's not, because I tightened it as far as I could tighten it before the fucking channel locks broke. Mm-hmm. And then I stubbed my toe yesterday morning so hard that
Grizzly.
It just split my toenail completely in half, and the half of it came off. And it was just a bloody crater.
Stump.
It's pretty good.
That's really didn't
hurt.
Just
at all.
Unpleasant to think about.
It hurt to stub my toe, but then I just was like, I guess I'll just peel a bunch of the flesh off of my foot.
Yeah.
And it still doesn't
hurt.
How
did you stub the middle toe? Like, what were you doing that was a thing?
Well, my desk is like a box. My desk is a complicated, it has a simple topology, but a complicated geometry.
Were you walking around giving someone the finger, except with your toe?
Yeah, well, I was actually giving myself the finger, and when I looked down to see who was giving me the finger, I forgot to pay attention to where I was going, and so I jammed my middle toe into the, anyway, my desk is made of, like, laminated particle board that's pretty thin. And I got up and was like, I better run in and take a shower real fast. And I just took a big, long foot swing and just ran it right into the corner of my desk. I did it again this morning.
Dang.
I think something changed. I think I moved, I maybe moved the trash can back a couple inches. And that was, like, the navigation buoy that I was using to not just hurt myself walking from my desk to my shower.
Oh, this is at home. This isn't at the office.
No. Yeah.
I was going to say, at the office, there's that whole, you have 12 monitors now, so...
I wouldn't take a shower at the office.
You've got a whole desk made out of monitors.
I know.
The shower at the office is in some sort of hole.
Yeah, it is. It's weird. It's like I guess they had this idea in the 70s that this is a combination shower and conversation pit. So only gross swingers
or barbecue
will live here.
Pit.
It did become a convenient shit soup cauldron when the sewer backed up.
That was great.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. Memories.
Again, don't ever fucking buy a building.
Yeah.
It's the worst thing. It is the worst thing. It's just this big responsibility, and they say, oh, it'll be worth something someday, but no, it won't. Everything is going to eventually just be on fire. The sun is going to go supernova, and then all real estate values go to zero.
I think what you should do is go back in time, buy a bunch of buildings in, like, say, 2002, and then sell all of them in 2006, and then never buy any property ever again.
Well, here, so if we have this technology, why don't we go back to, say, 1970 and buy a bunch of buildings, and then sell them all?
Time.
Sell them all in 1985.
I'm assuming that you can't.
I mean,
go back to 19.
Go back to 1980 and buy a bunch of Microsoft and Apple stock. If you're gonna,
well, I'd go back to 1980 and buy a nice big bucket of like beef stock,
fried chicken,
and then make soup.
Some consommé.
Yeah. I'd go find the guys that were building the sewer pipes out of tar paper and say, fucking knock it off. Are you an idiot?
Yeah.
And then they would say, yes. Yes, I am. This was the only job that I could get as somebody exposed to prenatal pot smoke.
My contract with the city demands that if I'm to be permitted to make sewer pipes out of tar paper, I must confirm my idiocy to anyone who asks. So yes, sir, I am an idiot.
In terms of my probation.
Yeah.
Well, how are things in Chicago?
Pretty decent. I made a giant pot of chili. Nice. That lasted me up.
You made a
today.
Giant botticelli?
Yeah, botticelli.
Yeah, you just need, you know,
every
big scallop shell.
Painter, and different sculpture. Okay.
Oh, you did not make a Botticelli's Venus. You made just a botticelli.
Yeah.
Like a, okay.
Vat of celli.
Yeah, it was tough because I was trying to make some chili that I would eat and that Melissa would also eat, but I don't think she's
radishes and I don't know what Melissa eats.
Radishes, air, and like a microwave mac and cheese.
I like spicy food a lot more than most people around me, so it's tough finding a compromise.
Well, what you do is you make your own little side pot of chili that you then mix in to the regular chili, and that side pot you make 1,000 times hotter than you want, and then you mix it one part that to 1,000 parts normal chili.
I basically just added a bunch of hot sauce to the chili that when I would eat it, so that worked out just fine. I added a little bit of cinnamon, and I added too much, and I added less than a teaspoon. I think when like a recipe says add a pinch of cinnamon, they mean like literally just a tiny little pinch of cinnamon.
I've never tried cinnamon in my chili.
Well,
I like a little lime juice.
You make a pot of chili, and then before you eat the chili, just take a heaping spoonful of cinnamon and eat it.
God. That works out really good. You could wash it down with an entire gallon of whole milk.
We could have died. We could have died.
I don't think we were going to die from that.
Oh, did you actually try that?
Yeah, we didn't know. I'd never heard anything about it. This was when we were doing the Idiot-a-Rod. The people who were running the Idiot-a-Rod set up these, like, gross challenges that you had to do. And some people who were not the people running the Idiot-a-Rod set up a fake one that they were making people do the cinnamon challenge.
That's pretty funny.
It was
actually
pretty good. That was the only thing that those assholes did that I actually had any respect for was pulling that off. But yeah, I didn't have such a hard time. Kevin, you did the wrong thing. You breathed or you coughed while you were doing it or something, and it really really knocked you on
it
your ass.
It fucked up my shit for
gross.
A long time. And I had I had a cinnamon snot for a long time. It was just gross. Yeah.
Isn't that an Elmore Leonard book? Cinnamon snot?
Maybe.
Can you not drink a whole gallon of whole milk?
Apparently, yeah. I don't think your stomach will hold that.
An entire gallon.
You can look it up on YouTube if you want to see people throwing up milk.
I mean, I don't. But, I mean, do you just have to, like, you could certainly drink it over the course of a day.
Oh, sure.
So
but,
you could drink
but
it over
not,
the course of 12 hours.
Yeah, but not within, I don't remember specifically what the time limit was.
I remember dad talking about some, like, eating a certain number of saltines in a minute.
Yeah, I remember
or something.
That one, yeah. Man, I saw a
somebody
YouTube video the other
college.
Day of one of those Japanese speed eating guys eating an entire 12-inch pizza, in 60 seconds.
Huh.
That was kind of nuts.
And I thought, 60 seconds seems like an awful long time.
Yeah, I've been meaning to talk to you about how fast you eat, Kevin. It's making people uncomfortable. Also, somebody's trying to hack my computer. Kevin's mom once had a talk with him about how fast he ate because it made her 900-year-old ex-boyfriend uncomfortable.
Your exaggeration in almost every case makes it very hard to understand when you're saying something that is quasi-factual.
That guy doesn't have to pay any taxes, at least.
Because he's a scum.
A friend of mine.
That's why your mom and I get along so well.
Drink,
I like skeletons
drink,
and she likes dating them.
a gallon of milk, but he added the proviso that it would be chocolate milk. He still did not. He did not finish it.
He still has not finished it.
No. He got like over halfway through the gallon before I think he gave up. But it was.
My grandma once tried to try some sort of diet that the basically the central tenet of the diet was that you just have to drink a certain amount of water every day. But she did the like ounces to gallons conversion wrong.
Oh shit.
And so probably could have done some serious damage to herself. Like, she just did a lot of throwing up of just water.
Wow.
Because she was trying to drink, like, 4 gallons of water a day or something. Instead of a gallon of water a day.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, you're supposed to eat 8 glasses, according to nobody. You're supposed to drink 8 glasses, according to nobody, except common wisdom. But that's
well,
not a real
you're,
thing.
You're supposed to drink.
You drink when you're hungry. You eat when you're thirsty.
You're supposed to drink 8 glasses worth of water. You don't just drink the glasses.
You just eat. You chew up and swallow 8 tumblers per day. Oh, and then take pictures of it and post them on your blog.
Oh.
Have you guys been playing any video games?
Yeah, Riff. I played. Let me see if I can remember the title. Limits and Demonstrations. Which is the Kentucky Route Zero free side story, which is very puzzling, and I'm not sure what it has to do with the story of Kentucky Route Zero, but apparently
it is puzzling. There is it, like you are bemused, or puzzling in that you had to solve a bunch of puzzles.
No, bemused. There are no puzzles in this. It's very short. It takes place in an art gallery where there is an exhibit of. Basically the life's works of this one particular installation artist. And so you're basically just walking around the room looking at these odd sort of setups, and one of them involves a sort of choose-your-own-adventurized audio diary that she made over the course of the last few years of her life. I don't know, it's very eerie and it's pretty cool. I don't think that whatever connection it has to the main Kentucky Route Zero story has been revealed yet.
And were they just messing around and doing something else in the engine?
I believe it does have something to do with the eventual story. It's just the connection isn't yet apparent because the relevant chapter of Kentucky Route Zero hasn't been released yet.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that they know.
Yeah, I don't
how
know.
It's going to go.
No.
And how much of it they're just making up as they go along J.J. Abrams style.
They definitely, I know, have a lot of stuff in mind because they had, they didn't reveal most of it, but the original Kickstarter talked a little bit about what their eventual plans for story stuff was.
They have the last page of it locked in a safe.
Yeah.
At J.K. Rowling's house.
J.J. Rowling's house.
J.J. Rowling.
But yeah, so it's pretty cool. It's interesting. If anybody that thinks they might be interested in Kentucky Route Zero but haven't tried it yet, I encourage you to download this because it's free. And if you think it's cool, then you'll probably like that.
Who do you think would win in a fight between J.K. Rowling, J.J. Abrams, and J.R.R. Tolkien if it was a being a skeleton fight?
J.R.R. Tolkien has the advantage of that third initial.
Okay, mm-hmm. And being the only one who is currently a skeleton.
Yeah.
But both of the other two contain skeletons.
Sure. J.K. Rowling could get someone to conjure a skeleton for her. J.J. Abrams could just insinuate the presence of a skeleton off camera and everybody would be unable to shut up about it.
Nobody would be able to fight J.J. Abrams because they wouldn't be able to see because of all the lens flares pouring off.
Is that a lens flare joke?
I think
about
so, yes.
J.J. Abrams.
Okay. Yes.
I heard, I read on the internet that those are overplayed. I found out about J.J. Abrams lens flare jokes being overplayed about 30 seconds after the first J.J. Abrams lens flare joke I ever saw. So I might be a little behind the curve.
Was this also on Metafilter?
No, I think it was on Twitter.
Okay.
But, yeah.
He also is really into camera shake. And in fact, he basically doesn't let anybody else shake the camera because he wants to do it a very particular way. And so, like, there'll be like a like this, you know, this really big camera rig, which is meant to stabilize the camera, and he'll be there, sort of just pounding on it, making it vibrate the way that he wants during a shot.
I haven't seen enough of his stuff to really judge, but I like the new Star Trek.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah. I mean, Lost was definitely compelling, even though I feel like it was probably, like, frustrating. I haven't seen more than the first season of it, and
like, I watched the first episode. I watched the first episode and just had no desire to see the second one. Like, I was just like, eh.
I watched the first season, but and enjoyed that, but never got around to seeing the second one. And then as I started seeing people discuss it as the series went on, I was like, all right, well, maybe it's just as well that I didn't spend the time on this.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like you shouldn't get invested because it's.
I have heard good things about Carnival.
I'll loan it to you.
I need to watch Deadwood too, apparently.
Oh yeah, you do.
I bought a copy of The Lost Room the other day.
Oh, all right.
As because nice. The very, very sketchy outline of a plot I have of maybe a novel to write has...
Relies on you just writing down the writing events down, of
yes,
The Lost
Room. The Lost Room. Okay. It's not so much a novel as a transcription.
Okay.
But no, it has some slightly related plot elements, and I wanted to watch that again.
So whenever somebody says to you, Riff, where do you get your ideas? You just say, from television.
Yeah, Amazon.
Anything else?
The other thing I played was the demo to Etrian Odyssey 4, which is...
Oh, pardon me while I don't buy that game.
I mean,
Etrian
Odyssey 3 is pretty good. But yeah, it is basically, as far as I can tell, exactly the same as Etrian Odyssey 3, except...
Are you sure you're not just playing the wrong game?
No,
you do that sometimes.
I mean, I downloaded this, and it had a 4 on it, so I'm assuming.
You sure that wasn't just because it cost $4? Well, they wouldn't tell you it's magical.
Yeah,
Nintendo
Star bucks.
Points.
Yeah. But it's basically a graphically improved version of 3. I mean, the background art is nicer, and the monsters that wander around on the map instead of being random encounters are actual like monster models instead of just being glowing orbs and things like that. I was a little disappointed that the Etrian Odyssey 3 had a really interesting side mini game sort of thing where you had a boat and it would give you destinations on the map and a very specific number of moves to reach that destination, having to figure out how to get around currents and obstacles and pirates and stuff. And it was very puzzly, and it was really cool. But unfortunately, 4 has replaced that with an airship that you use to travel and find the other dungeons, and it doesn't have the puzzle element. So that's a bit of a bummer. But other than that, I mean, if you like Etrian Odyssey 3... It's more of the same.
You still have to make your own map.
Yeah. They added another... It's got like twice as many of little annotation icons that you can stick to the map, which is handy.
You know what else is handy?
What?
Automap.
Automap isn't as satisfying.
Sure it is. Go play Might and Magic 2 and tell me that Automap is not satisfying. Nah, you're not going to do that.
I mean, I'm not going to do that. If you went back in time and told me to play it when I was 14, I probably would have done that.
Sure.
What about...
I played one of the Might and Magics, but I don't know which one.
Well, you played 3 as a video games hot dog assignment.
I think it must have been 1 then, but...
1 was very, very old. It was like CGA graphics, and you did have to make your own maps.
Yeah. Is that the one that came with, like, the notepad of...
Yeah,
I think it did. Dot grids.
Yeah.
That must have been the one I played then.
That was nuts.
What about the semi-auto mapping of Mia's Mata? How'd you feel about that?
I mean, that was cool. I mean, I don't dislike auto mapping. I just think it's fun to draw my own.
I think the best auto mapping was the auto mapping in The Simpsons Hit and Run, where you just go up to Otto and he gives you a map.
Oh, really?
I don't think so.
Oh,
but that would be funny.
That would have been funny.
I need to dig out The Simpsons Hit and Run. I keep thinking about it and thinking, I should play The Simpsons Hit and Run.
I've never played it.
Because I played it a little bit, and I thought, I should play more of this, and then I didn't. And that was 10 years ago or something. I don't know.
Jenny and I theorized today a game called Grand Theft Puppy, which is basically just Grand Theft Auto, except you're 12.
And so you're jacking people's dogs and riding them from place to place?
Well, nah, I mean, you're jacking people's bicycles and riding them
to... So it's like San Andreas.
Candy store heists and stuff, yeah.
Okay. You're going to get some coffee. There were quotes around that. I mean, Bully.
Yeah, I never played Bully. I've heard it's really good, actually.
Well, I don't know. It drove me crazy. Like, it was like, hey, here's this big game, but you have to go to school. Which I guess was, like, the central sort of thing about it, right? That's what the game is about. But it was always super frustrating.
Really?
I mean, because it was like, how far can I get out into the world before the bell rings and the...
Like Majora's Mask.
Yeah, and fuck that. Like, that's not the kind of tension that interests me. I'm curious. They released a new edition of it, and I wonder if any of the things that they did in that are anything that would... make it more fun for me. Probably not. But I don't know. It's one of those things where I feel like an asshole for not liking it. I feel like I should play it. I should like it. I should be able to deal with the things that it's presenting me with. You know, but I should also read real literature. But I'd rather just continue reading the same Orson Scott Card book over and over again. Also, I hate gays.
That was the title of the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hate gays.
It must be a sequel to something, but I don't know which one. Ender's Game. Also, I hate gays. I saw something recently, like Orson Scott Card is.
Yeah, he got hired to write something
that he's writing, or is it a television show?
Or is it a video? I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't either. That is always the go-to example for, like, separating an artist from their art.
Yeah.
And trying to determine whether it's okay to like Ender's Game if you're not a homophobe.
Superman comics is what he was writing.
It's a what? Oh, Superman.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah, because, I mean, didn't they decide last year that Superman was gay?
Explain the outfit, right?
They decided that somebody was gay. Judge Dredd, maybe?
Oh, no. There was a thing about Judge Dredd being gay, but it turned out not to be canon. It was like a sort of joke thing that one of the artists or writers did.
No, that's not funny.
It turns out it's Lewis Lane and not Lois Lane.
This is like bad 80s comic night. That's, come on. It's Adam and Eve, not Krypton.
Not Adam and Adam Green and Lantern.
All right. Kevin, what have you been playing?
Just The Room, which you recommended that I pick up.
That is very cool.
You must have talked about that on a podcast.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I mentioned it. Yeah.
Again, that sounds
like I feel like I saw a picture of them having built an actual puzzle box in one of the forms of the rooms.
Wow, really?
Puzzle boxes or whatever.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I mean, you couldn't actually build it functional, right? Because it's...
Well, you certainly can build more than one functional because of the way they nest inside each other, impossibly.
Right.
But, I mean, the individual ones are also impossible in the way that things slide into and out of them. That
I think
fit.
Some of them were, but not necessarily all
The first one might have worked. I don't think any of the second or third ones would have. It was pretty cool. It was, like, it was graphically stunning. Like, it was just beautiful. Yeah. And the puzzles were more or less interesting. Like, they were... Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like they were cheap, and I didn't have to like go to any spoilers at any point. And
did you use any of the in-game hints?
I didn't, not on purpose. I accidentally hit the hint button a couple times because it was up on the corner of the screen, and I'd like run over it with my finger or whatever. But like,
in two cases, I had to use hints when it was a puzzle that involved fucking tilting the phone because it just never occurs to me that that is a way of controlling something. Because fuck that as a way of controlling something. Like,
I
you know, in order to solve this puzzle, you just need to like fuck up your monitor so that you can't see anything.
I keep playing like the 100 rooms updates. They had like a Valentine's Day update, and like they always have something that is tilting the phone. So like that it was fresh in my mind.
The room is like, describe it in basic terms for people who haven't played it, so they'll know if they're interested or not, because you should fucking buy this thing.
It is it's a dollar. Yeah, it's a how do you describe it? It's a, instead of an escape the room game, it is a get inside the box game.
It's like, I mean, it's a virtual puzzle box.
Box. Yeah, but starts out as a safe. So much more complicated than a real puzzle box would ever be. That it, I don't know that really.
Well, I mean, just like virtual reality is way more than the real world could ever hope to be. Ride the wave to cyberspace.
But yeah, so you're like dragging the screen to shift your perspective around the box and looking for little doors that you can drag open and find the key inside them, and then find the keyhole. And
there's an eye. There's a monocle that you can wear that lets you see into space.
Yep.
I don't know if it. You see into death. Death space.
The story was like kind of interesting. It was a little hokey, but also, you know, the sense of atmosphere in the game was pretty well crafted.
It was hokey, but there was little enough of it that you didn't get tired of the hoke.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
The all the interactions felt really good to me. Like all the pulling the drawers open and turning the knobs and stuff, at all, I don't know.
Yeah.
It had like like weight. I don't know really how.
I think a lot of that was good sound design.
Yeah, I played it on the iPad, which is very nice.
I played it on my phone, and Emily has been playing it on the iPad, and it didn't seem all that different. I don't remember really being frustrated by any of the controls, but
the only thing that I was frustrated by was the one where you had to look through a particular viewport and then shift around to the other side of the box to do a control, and then go back and look through the other viewport. But other than that, it was fine.
I guess there was one puzzle where you had to change your angle of view and move something around that was inside that window, and I had a hard time getting it to recognize that I was trying to move that thing. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about where there was the dial to rotate something on the other side of the box, so you would like have to leave the viewport and go back over to the other side of the box to like to do and to effect a change. The central thing with four levels to it.
Very good game though.
Yeah, I mean the puzzles were pretty decent. I feel like I was reasonably well challenged with them and enjoyed them. And for a dollar, it was a great game. Yeah. And I'm, you know, like I hope that they come out with a sequel or more levels.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like another level pack. I don't know how hard that is to make, right? Because it's all what 3D rendered stuff, and you have to conceive of it and then make it a thing. Like, I don't even know how you would start designing something like that.
Yeah, I don't have any conception of how making a 3D game like that even works.
We should make better video games. Play anything else?
Nope, that's basically it. I have not. I've either been working. I played, I don't know, 5 or 6 hours of the assignment, and then, just working basically. So
I've been working and playing Path of Exile. I have a plan. I'm gonna see what happens. I'm going to start going into the chat on Path of Exile and talking shit about Diablo because of the always on DRM, and see how many people I can get to agree with me that the always on DRM in Diablo 3 is total shit, while playing a game with exactly the same online structure as Diablo 3. Because I have this theory, which is that all of those people are just saying things without actually thinking about them or meaning what they're saying. And I'd like to collect some evidence. Somebody posted a reply to our Twitter that was like, you weren't joking about the chat just being people talking shit about Diablo 3 for no reason. And like, I would never joke about something as serious as that.
I tried to play it with that unofficial Mac client. I mean, and it played. I don't want to bag on the game because of using a totally unofficial client, but it seemed really clunky, and I just couldn't hack it.
I mean, it's certainly like there was nothing ever about it that made me think that the interface wasn't any good or that the game was technically poor. Hmm. Like it's pretty slick. Was it unresponsive? Was it low frame rate? Was it what do you?
When I got to the town, it got real low frame rate, and graphically not very impressive. Although the skill map looks really nice.
I got to this crazy hard boss fight in the third act, and then I was like, "What the fuck? How are you supposed to do this?" Because it like just was. Suddenly this one area and the boss fight was like five times as hard as anything else that you'd encountered. And everybody was like, well, you're such a fucking stupid noob. Stupid. Dummy. Probably don't even have any resistances. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I don't. Maybe I'll go look on a wiki about how to get some resistances. So then I got some resistances and I leveled up a couple times and I went in and did it and it was okay. Here's the thing that was super frustrating, though. So imagine this happening to you in a Diablo. So you fight through level one of the everything is a skeleton that shoots 10 fireballs at you, and so you keep getting killed and having to go back in. The entrance to this dungeon is right next to a waypoint, so it's not a super big deal. You know, you just run back in. And then you finally clear out level one, and you make it down to level two. And you're in level two, and you get you throw up a town portal, and you get in case you get killed, so that you can get back in there. This game, because of this particular mechanical thing about the way that it works, which I understand, I just disagree with. You more often are using town portals to give yourself a way to get back to where you were than to go to town, right? It's more of a dungeon portal.
Yeah.
Than a town. It's like a beacon rather than just a convenience thing. Because if you get killed on level two and you don't have a portal in there, and it has been more than 7 to 9 minutes since you were in level one, it respawns level one.
Respawned, yeah.
So you have to fight through level one again. And it's just because like it's a free online game, and so they don't have the server storage to maintain maps of every zone that everyone has been in. This is my assumption, at least. I mean, because they don't have the money that those assholes at Blizzard have to provide adequate infrastructure. I mean, they also, nobody paid for this game, so. I looked more into the microtransaction stuff, and they are, and this is a thing that I kind of don't like, they are very committed to not giving you any gameplay advantage for giving them money. And that makes me so unlikely to give them any money for some reason. It's probably just because I'm an asshole. So the things that you can buy are additional tabs for your shared stash, but you already start with a fuckload. You start with like 8 times your inventory in shared storage.
Damn.
Between characters. And You can buy with microtransaction currency the ability to color and name the tabs of your stash.
What?
I would give them $20 right now if I could give them $20 to quadruple the size of my inventory.
Yeah.
And I don't think that would be a real serious competitive advantage. I don't even know if there is PvP in this game. I don't think that would be anything other than a very minor convenience tweak, right? Because it would just stop me from spending a bunch of time running around generating new maps that they have to store.
Yeah.
But that doesn't seem to be a thing that you can give them money for. You can give them like little scorpions that follow you around. You don't give them that. You give them money and they give you that. They don't do anything. They don't sting your opponents. They sting you. They poison you.
Oh.
I don't think that's actually true. I don't. There is. this is a weird thing. Like, the landscape of free-to-play games, like, everybody that you talk to now is so in agreement that, like, the business models of free-to-play games are just revolting and exploitative, and they're all assholes, and these are these rules that you have to follow if you want to be the good guys in free-to-play. Basically, you have to go out of business if you want to be the good guy in free-to-play. Right? And I, you know, my experience with KOL over the years, which was not developed and did not acquire its player base in the current environment where there is so much of this shitty stuff going on, mm-hmm. but like, it, I mean, KOL is pretty pay to win as far as that goes. It would be very easy to describe it that way, but we make a serious effort not to be sleazy about it,
yeah.
and people trust us and they're willing to give us money for these things that confer gameplay advantages. And I think a lot of it is because that's not the only way to get it. People, there is this axiom among developers of free-to-play games that says you absolutely have to keep your microtransaction currency and your in-game currency entirely isolated from one another. And I sort of believe that the right thing to do is the exact opposite of that.
I mean, it's certainly not been our experience that it's a problem to do that.
I mean, I like where the Secret World made it to, which is that they moved from subscription plus a cosmetic cash shop to no subscription, cosmetic cash shop, and then you can buy, like, mission packs. You can just buy some content for a couple of bucks. Mm-hmm. That seems great. That seems like a great model. But, you know, if there's rewards in that content, that's kind of, it's pay to win, pay to win, pay to win. Bad guys. Like, there is this idea somehow that Diablo 3, because you can give them money and then buy gear, is, like, ethically objectionable. Mm. And I don't really understand that.
I mean, I thought it was I didn't think it was ethically objectionable. I thought it was a bummer that the game seemed to be balanced around forcing you to go to get your gear off the auction hall at the beginning of your second run through. But because the gear that was drops was just not effective enough at that point in the game to get anywhere.
Yeah. I don't know.
But apparently Blizzard is, I mean, the guys in charge of
fuckers. Bunch of assholes who don't know what games
should
be
the guys in charge of Diablo 3 are, like, seriously, have said that they're discovering that there are some problems with the setup, and they're looking at ways to tweak or refine the auction hall in such a way that people aren't getting all of their gear off the auction hall anymore.
Hmm. I mean, I didn't spend a whole lot of time there. I played it and had fun and never felt like I was being compelled to spend any money.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, the gear upgrades that you're talking about on the auction hall are things that are trivially inexpensive, right? They're things that people are throwing into the auction hall instead of vendor selling because somebody might want them for, you know, five times as much gold as you would get from a vendor, and turns out that that's true and that somebody is you, right? Which, that seems fine to me. Like, that seems like an indication that this is a functional multiplayer game with an economy.
Well, the quote I read was that because people were getting gear off of the auction hall that's better than what they were finding, and therefore all of the gear they were using was from the auction hall. That meant that there was not really any attachment to your gear. It just sort of felt like you were renting it.
Sure. But, I mean, somebody found that gear, right?
Well, there was one person who found your hat and one person who found your gloves. Like, it's in a given run, you might maybe find a piece of gear that you would wear, but more likely you would find a piece of gear that somebody else wants.
Who is much lower, like, level than you.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily even lower level, just some other character class. Like, there's the odds that a piece of gear will drop that you want were so low.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, that was true. That was also true in Diablo 2. It's just that there wasn't an official infrastructure to support the player economy, so you just had to kind of poke around.
It wasn't, though. It really wasn't, right? Like they really ratcheted... Like, they talked about how they really ratcheted the gear drop power way
down. The class-specific gear seemed way more common in 3 than in 2.
Like, they definitely made choices that made the...
Yeah.
The gear drop situation less satisfying in Diablo 3, which... You know, it was not that big a deal to me, but I also
I don't remember finding it less satisfying, but it's, you know.
Yeah, I had fun. I played through it once and maybe once and a half, and I feel like I got my money's worth.
I was able to get some helpful advice from some people, you know, like, I learned that there is a particular orb in... Path of Exile that if you sell unidentified blues, you get a currency that trades very favorably with vendors for identify scrolls, which identify scrolls then trade for portal scrolls, so you can use them to like survive difficult areas without having to have the parent area respawn because you left it for too long. That technical limitation is so frustrating, because what you can do is like, oh, well, shit, I got to remember every 7 minutes to real quickly run over into level 1 of that dungeon so that it doesn't respawn. Like, it doesn't stop you from doing that.
Huh.
There was one area where I noticed this thing, and I understand now why this happened. It is like a pyramid with 5 different levels on it, or 6 different levels, and they're all on the same map. The stairs are just teleporters to somewhere, so you can see the other levels on the mini-map if you zoom it out. And I think that's because that was a place where it was constantly unspawning levels underneath people, that they were then getting pissed off that they had to explore them again.
Huh.
And it's like, all right, well, maybe everywhere that is a branch of a tree that's quest important should work like that. You know, like, yeah, it's rough. That's rough. I guess there are a lot of games that make a ton of money with just cosmetic cash shop stuff, but it is so hard. It is so hard for me to really internalize that, just because I would be so unlikely to pay for a hat.
Yeah.
In this game.
I mean, KOL's been going for 10 years. How long did it take Glitch to fold?
Well, I mean...
Right?
They were spending on salaries in a month, what, twice what we spend in a year?
Hmm.
I mean, and so it wouldn't have mattered, right? I mean, they could have been successful as, you know, at a level that we would have considered successful, but not... You know, there were a lot of them. It was a big, big shop. And, you know, it was in a place with high cost of living, and so salaries were high, and, you know... But even, you know, I think about something like Maple Story, right? Like, don't they only sell cosmetic stuff, or do they sell actual game?
I don't know. I've never...
I mean, like, I can understand games being sustained with, like, XP boost potions and stuff, and I am scared for Path of Exile, because it is really good, and it seems like their model is like, let's stick to the principles of not making any money. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope they're making a ton of money, right? But like, I don't know. I gotta feel like the kind of person that is talking in the chat when I am in there is not the kind of person that is gonna pay for something.
That is gonna buy a hat. Yeah.
And I hope that there are enough people that will. I want to support them, but I feel stupid buying any of the things that they're selling, because the things that they are selling are valueless, right? Like, anything useful. I would buy anything useful from you, but, like, the core value espoused by your cash shop is uselessness. And it's... I just can't do it. I don't know. You know, I wonder what would happen. Like, you know, if we do the Word Realms MMO and... launch it with the same kind of business model KOL has, I think people would look at it and say, oh, it's bullshit, you guys are assholes. You know?
I don't know if that's true. I mean, we work pretty hard to keep things accessible to people that
right,
aren't
but we don't
giving us money.
But we don't market that. We don't produce material that demonstrates that to people. People are just going to glance at it and draw these. I mean, it's like, I feel like, you know, the same people who log into KOL for the first time say, frames, that's for babies, and then just leave. Like, oh, okay. Well, you've drawn a conclusion about a thing without actually investigating why it might be there or how it works, so...
So, but in Path of Exile, do you just have zero interest in, like, having, I don't know, a cool haircut on your character, or what? Not having logged in, you know, I don't know what all the cosmetic stuff is, but, like...
It's like little pets that follow you around, which I do not want, because that's just visual clutter, right?
Right.
Making it harder to tell what's going on. And it's, like, different animations for spells and stuff. And you can get, like, you know... Your guy is on fire all the time. Whatever.
I have enough of that in my real life, thanks.
Yeah.
Having a cool spell animation might be neat. Like, you know. The problem is that it's not... I would also have a hard time spending money on that. Like... Yeah.
I really would be more likely to just give them money than to buy the shit that they're selling. Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't, there can't be a lot of people like me in that regard out there. Although you guys seem to know where I'm coming from on this.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand it. It's weird that you are so adamant about it. Like, you know, give them some money and just don't spend the currency, you know, like that is one way of dealing with the problem.
Yeah, you're right. You are right.
And then if they eventually come out with something that's useful, then you'll have the currency.
Then I'll have gotten bored and spent all my currency on sweet scorpions.
Or if they come out with a thing that lets your character just be a sweet skeleton.
Oh, that would be, I would do that.
Think about all the interest you'll earn on all your in-game currency if you don't spend it.
Yeah. I would pay for an all that you're always a skeleton. I mean, that's going to get really weird for multiplayer because so many of the enemies are skeletons that like people would just constantly be like, why can't I kill this skeleton named Jefferton?
Jefferton?
Why?
All the names I tried were taken.
Nice.
You know, when they come out with like wands that let you change other people into skeletons and then kill them,
you get a sweet sword.
Yeah, I would do that. Yeah, yeah. Also, like, I am so intimidated by. I'm not intimidated by it. I'm just dreading. I dread trying to get involved in the player economy because I asked, how does somebody go about getting started in the player economy of this game? And everybody immediately links you to this website where there's a website that seems to be tracking the agreed upon exchange rates between the different kinds of orbs. But you can't really trade that way. Like, you have to sort of like trust that everybody's looking at that website and agrees. But it's like, if you want something from somebody, you have to have something that they want, right? And it's, again, you know, this problem we talked about last week. Like, the reason that currency exists is to solve a really serious fundamental problem with barter economies.
Yeah,
right.
And it's just like, you know, everybody says... No, the game doesn't have an auction house because that would ruin it because it's like, you know, it would ruin it. Like, because it would make it like Diablo 3, and Diablo 3 is lame and was ruined.
Because there would be better information for bartering.
So, I could see getting involved in the player economy if I got a rare item to drop and I looked on a website, I'm like, all right, you know, what is the value of this relative to other things? What is something that I could use that has the approximate value of this? And then I could just drop it into a box, and then in the other side of the box, I could say, here's what I want for this, is like, you know, two orbs of chance. This rare on sale for two orbs of chance, mm-hmm. and then just walk away. Yeah. And if at any point in the next day somebody is willing to pay two orbs of chance for that thing, they could click a button and then it would send me the two orbs of chance and send them my thing. That is a thing that I would believe might work. But if it is just repeatedly saying that into chat,
yeah,
into trade chat, yeah. Like, fuck that. Trade chat, I think we kind of run into this in KOL. I don't know. There are people that use it, I guess. But it seems like... Yeah. If a trade chat channel has sufficient density to actually move things around in the economy, it has too much density to be comprehensible, right? So it's constantly skirting the boundary of usefulness. I guess there are people who enjoy, like, paying attention and swooping in and getting a good deal on something because they know that they don't have anything to do this weekend, so they can just sit in trade chat. But, like, you know, it not being a thing that you can realistically pay attention to while you're playing the mm-hmm. game, because you will miss shit. And sometimes when you mouse over an item that somebody links in chat, it gives you a tooltip about it, and sometimes it doesn't. And I have not been able to figure out what the difference is between those two situations. Maybe a listener will explain it. Anyway, I'm still enjoying it because I'm still progressing through the game and seeing new environments. And their environment construction is a lot more Diablo 2 than Diablo 3.
Hmm. It looks... The randomized maps between towns.
Yeah, the visual design of it is more akin to Diablo 3 because it is very multi-leveled and stuff. And, you know, there's skeletons will crawl up the little rail, the railed walkways that you're on in these cathedrals, you know, and enemies will spawn from the environment like they do in Diablo 3 in ways that are visually interesting. But it is much harder to see the seams in the generation algorithms than it is in Diablo 3. Like, dungeons in Diablo 3, it gets to the point where if you start looking at the maps, you can just see the grid lines. Like, you can just see, like, okay, this entire dungeon is a bunch of big squares that all have exits in the middle of each face. And they do various things inside, and they occur in various rotations. But these are, like, giant set-piece chunks of environment that are put together in this very obvious way. And I don't mind that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the complaint that Diablo 3's environments were a little less organic seeming than Diablo 2's is one that I sort of agree with.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did some neat stuff. The circular, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how this worked, and I took a whole lot of screenshots of minimaps, and I'd play through the ones that are like concentric circles.
Oh,
the things where you're going up the side of that spire. Those were really
cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and I started seeing some of the same environmental pieces, but I never did go back and look at all those screenshots, and because I got a new hard drive, the screenshots are probably just gone, but... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I will. Apparently, the way the end game in Path of Exile works is via these maps that you get, which are sort of like... There was something like this in Torchlight, right? Where you use the map and it opens a portal, like a limited number of times use portal to a newly generated environment. And like the patch that came out yesterday, it was like added a bunch of new environment types to these maps. And you can do, like, you can upgrade a map to make it go to a richer version of the thing. And yeah, it seems like a system that I really want to get to the end game so that I can play with it.
Yeah.
You know, at least to understand how it works. I guess I could probably just also read a wiki about it, but that's not how I roll. I guess you're right. I guess I should just give them $20 and just keep the currency. I mean, I wonder if you could give it away. I wonder if you are allowed to trade the donation currency with other people, the microtransaction currency.
I mean, probably. That would be defeating the purpose of the barter economy, wouldn't it? Because then that's actual currency for goods.
I guess so.
Yeah, it probably doesn't exist as physical objects.
Yeah, I guess that people would just decry that as up. Oh, you've just made this. You've made the entire economy RMT.
The
thing.
I forgot all the words.
To it's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. Yeah. Don't worry. It's most people don't know any of them.
The currency, the real money currency, is just stones of Jordan.
Yeah. It is actually a ring. Mm. Okay, well, that's what we've been playing. What's in the news, Kevin?
Well, something that will be of interest to everybody is that System Shock 2 is being released on good old games, finally.
Woo!
After, like, years of trying to figure out the rights and everything, it's apparently finally been resolved, and it's not, it'll be tomorrow as we're recording this, but it'll be today if or the day before if you're listening to it as a recording.
I'm pretty excited about that
right now. Yeah, I've never actually played System Shock 2.
I played about an hour of it and it seemed great. It was just, it's like cyberpunk Deus Ex.
Nice.
You know, it's got inventory management. It's got a bunch of crafting stuff. Like, you get these elements, and you can turn the elements into upgrades.
Nice.
Yeah, it seems awesome. But I only ever had one computer that it would run on, and it was a laptop that it would run on, but not very well. Mm. It's like a notoriously difficult game to run on modern hardware, and I am super stoked that GOG is packaging it for accessibility.
Yeah, they've apparently gone through and fixed a lot of like crash bugs and problems. So should be good.
Oh, speaking of this news thing from last week about the gas-powered games Wildman Kickstarter being in trouble. The gas-powered games Wildman Kickstarter was canceled.
Oh.
A few days before it would have failed, I guess.
System Shock, the original System Shock, was designed by a guy who went to MIT, and I think he might have been a member of my fraternity, because there are a lot of like in jokes from my fraternity in the game. I don't know if they made it all the way to System Shock 2. Yeah,
like the purple soda.
Yeah, grape soda was like a big deal at my fraternity. So I don't know. I think that's, I'm not sure how much of that is real and how much of that is legend from my fraternity, but
I heard that one of the early quests in that game involves having to swim across a lake with a lit candle shoved up your ass.
Lit cyber candle.
Okay, a lit cyber candle. Yeah,
I guess that would just be a flashlight.
Yeah. So and then you and like four other cyber droids get in a circle around a password cracker.
Oh.
Wow.
Cyber droids. It's, you know.
80s night. Jesse Schell, in a talk given at DICE, said that releasing a demo for a video game cuts your sales in half, and then gave some, like, data to demonstrate the truth of that, which was an interesting, like, argument. Like, the idea that like players of video games want to have demos so they can see whether or not they're going to enjoy a game or not, but from the business side of things, releasing a demo is a really bad idea. Like, what you want to do is build up like a hype and expectation about your game, but what you don't want to do is let people play it.
Yeah, you don't want to prove that it's just hype. I had never really thought about it, but yeah, it makes really good logical sense. I mean,
I've definitely played demos and then not bought
and then
the game,
not bought the like, game. Yeah, and some of them have been games that if it hadn't been for the demo, I would have bought it.
I'm trying to remember if I've ever played a demo and then bought the game, and I can't think of any.
Oh, I've definitely, like, The Room. Like, you told me to download it, and I did, and then it's free. But then you, like, you know, 10 minutes into the game, it's like, well, if you want to play more of this, give us money, right? Like, that was like the most obvious recent thing.
So I mean, that's gotta be. I think that in that case, it can't possibly be the case that if they had just sold the entire game for a dollar, that they would have sold twice as many copies. I could be wrong about that, I guess.
It might be the fact that it's only a dollar makes the difference.
There have been some other iOS games that I've got demos of and then bought the full version. Although a lot of them, I've just downloaded the demo and then been like, eh. So I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I'm getting the full version of Etrian Odyssey 4 after getting the demo. I mean, I pre-ordered it ages ago, but I still would anyway, even if I hadn't.
You know, to some extent, we can't really use... Me and Riff, especially, are not good indicators of what a market is like, because the only thing that we spend money on is video games, and we do so thoughtlessly.
I've
definitely been involved in betas of games that I've then bought, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, was the stress test of Diablo 2, was that a demo? It kind of was. Anyone could download it and play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember being so excited to put those chipped gems in my axe.
let's see here. The Kickstarter console, the Ouya, which I guess is coming out. People have copies of, or have versions of it at this point, and are playing games on it. Have talked about how they're going to be releasing a new version of the console every year, which I guess makes sense from their point of view.
Well, you know what's better than $1 million? $1 million a year.
Yeah. I can't believe that anybody is excited about playing phone games on their television.
Yeah. I mean, Android is meant to be more than just a phone OS, though, right? Because it's also something that runs on tablets and stuff. It's not just a phone.
All right. Those tablets that the Google employees who were issued one for free and no one else have. I suppose that's not true. I do pretty regularly see people with Android phones, right? But I don't think I've ever seen anybody with a non-iPad tablet. That said, I don't go to places where people have a lot of tablets. Which is to say, like, my bedroom.
So, I mean, I don't know how that's going to play out. I think it's interesting, the idea that there will be an escalation in just the hardware capabilities of it, which then raises a question whether games will be developed for later edition consoles, later edition Ouya consoles. Like,
I think they're going to deal with it the way that iPhone does, where it kind of doesn't matter. Like, games are being released and sold that won't run on iPhone 2s, but the built-in, like, obsolescence creep that's in the software makes it so nobody has an iPhone 2 anymore because none of them work. Hmm. Right? They just, the numbers start just fading on the phone keypad screen and stuff. And it's like, what, you wore it out with your finger. It's time to get a new one.
Yeah. And then there was an interesting New York Times article a couple days ago about a paper, like a white paper that came out in 2011. So it's not exactly fresh news, but it's been in the media recently, which is that there was a sort of like a study about violent video game sales and how they have, as violent video game sales have increased, it correlates with a reduction in youth violence. Not that there's a causality there necessarily, but if violent video games were causing violence, you would assume that there would be a regular relationship there as opposed to an inverse relationship. So
right.
Well, I mean, in the same way that correlation is not causation, lack of correlation is not lack of causation.
I guess.
Ice cream, what is it? Ice cream and murder?
Yeah, they both go up.
There's one I saw today about
Subway rides and slices Subway of rides pizza. And slice in New of York pizza, City.
Yeah.
What was the second half? Subway rides and what?
Slices of pizza. Like, the price of a slice of pizza in New York and the price of a single subway ride in New York have been the same since the 40s.
Yeah, something like that.
Like, when the cost of a piece of pizza goes up, it is very shortly after that that the price of a subway ticket rises to meet it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Violence.
I saw this movie this past week called Elephant. Have either of you guys seen this?
Nope.
Nope.
It was by Gus Van Sant, who's the same guy who did like Good Will Hunting and
he's the guitarist in Bruce Springsteen's band, right?
Right. The boss. But it was about it wasn't really about the Columbine shootings, but it was a movie set in a high school where there were some kids who came in and like shot up the place. Clearly, it was like from 2003, so it was like clearly relating to Columbine. And I thought it was one of the worst movies I'd ever seen. It was like 90% of the film was just like a camera viewpoint from behind a kid's head as he or she was walking around a hallway in a high school. And there was like the dialogue was really inane and there was like no character development and that kind of thing. And then I read some reviews online and like Roger Ebert gave it a huge glowing review and like it won Best Director and Best Picture at Cannes the year it came out. And my disconnect of enjoying the film versus sort of some of its critical reception just kind of blew my mind.
You finally found your Freddy got fingered.
Well, no, I'm wondering if maybe the release of stupid movies about high school violence is what causes violence.
Yeah, I mean, so right after the Newtown shooting, I saw a bunch of people quoted as saying, like, you know, there are going to be a rash of homicides that follow this one because of the extensive news coverage of this one. Like, if people who didn't live here didn't know about it, then there are a lot less people would get murdered over the next couple of weeks. Like, this is sensationalistic reporting, the focus on the guy who did it rather than the people who got killed.
Yeah.
The people who do this
do it because they want attention.
And it seems like...
And they get given it.
And it seems like all... Like, there has not been a day that has gone by since then that I haven't seen something else about another shooting. And, like... You know, it could be that it could be that those would have happened anyway and the news would have just ignored them if it hadn't been like, oh, people like stories about dudes getting shot
right
this week.
So here's a question. What happens if we just outlaw middle names?
Yeah, I mean, you don't get to earn your middle name by being a murderer anymore. Then that's...
Yeah.
Then it kills the incentive.
Wow. So does Roy become a double fugitive?
Ooh.
Yes.
Does that mean
he's... Because he has two middle names and he's Mexican.
Will he have to chase a no-armed man?
Yeah. It's been pretty easy to catch him. Well, the first time he falls down, it's over.
Yeah.
Roy wins. So this assignment, Antichamber.
Yeah. Pretty sweet.
We all finished it.
That's Kevin apparently finished it without getting the last gun.
Really?
So is there's apparently a red gun.
Yeah, there's a red gun.
Huh, how did you finish it without getting the red gun?
You don't need the red gun to finish it, because I finished it with the yellow gun.
I saw a 6-minute speed run video, almost all of which is the end game, but he gets the red gun.
Yeah.
He might not be able to do it that fast.
Yeah, in the comments he said that it is possible to win with the yellow gun, but... What you have to do that, it's faster to go get the red one.
When I started seeing the red blocks, I was like, huh, I wonder if there's a red gun. But I just did it with, I mean, it is totally possible to win with the yellow gun. As soon as I could beat puzzles, I just started beating them in that sort of in-game progression thing. And then I just got to the end and I was like, huh. Okay.
Did you beat it within the time limit?
No. I was somewhere in like the four some hour range, four and a half, four or five.
Yeah, I think that's probably about where I was. Mm. The timer's what, like 2 hours?
Hour and a half, and 2 hours. Okay. Yeah.
I remember there being time left on the timer at midnight, and when I finished it, I looked up and saw that it was 2. And so
I think it took me 6 or 8. I'm not positive.
There were a lot of the little icons on the wall that I hadn't gotten, probably like 20 of them.
Yeah, me too.
I was 3 icons short. So.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot more complete. There were a lot of... I only found like 4 of the pink cubes.
Hmm. Those apparently do not do anything yet. I guess he's still developing the game, and whatever those pink cubes do has not yet been installed.
I only found 1 of the concept art rooms. I found 2 of the pink cubes. But, you know, I found myself in the beginning really aggravated by not knowing what the next puzzle was that I was supposed to solve. It always frustrates me not knowing whether you don't have the tools to solve a puzzle or whether you don't have the insight to solve a puzzle, mm-hmm. because one of those is a thing that you can solve by not leaving this room.
The game is incredibly nonlinear, though. There are
yeah,
2 or 3 different ways to everything.
My tech to deal with that was just if I was having trouble figuring a thing out, I just didn't worry about whether it was me or the fact that I didn't have the tools. There were just always enough choices of puzzles to work on that I could go do something else for a while. And every now and then go back to that other puzzle and maybe I'd think of what it was and maybe I wouldn't, and eventually I'd find another gun and that would probably do it either way.
I solved a lot of puzzles without really understanding how I solved them. There's something about the way that I play games like this that I feel like that all the time, even though it's like, well, I beat it, so I must have figured out at least some of these puzzles, right? But like,
can you describe one that you didn't understand? Should we explain like what anti-chamber is? Like, it's a first-person shooter.
Yeah, there's, you move, you fuck with blocks.
Shooter where you start off and you don't have any way to interact with the environment really, and then you can jump basically.
Yeah, and then eventually you find a gun that, well, a blue gun, which allows you to, when you find like small cubes through the environment, this gun will suck them in, and then you can shoot them out singly to a different location, and not as like bullets, but as like, I'm picking up this cube and it goes in my gun, and then I eject it from the gun to put it back somewhere else.
It's and then the what, gun, yeah. Upgrades and slowly gets a
few, yeah, like, and every additional gun you get makes the things that you can do with the cubes a little bit more interesting.
I felt as though I came to this insight where it didn't matter what color the bricks in the environment were.
Mm-hmm. I think that color is only to suggest to you what color gun you need to solve that problem.
I don't believe you, Riff.
Really?
There was a puzzle that had a bunch of green blocks on it, and I remember you having said the blocks indicate what color you should have to solve this puzzle, and I spent maybe an hour trying to solve this puzzle with a green gun, and I was like, you might be able to solve this with a green gun, but it would require so much precise timing that I think it's bullshit, and it is trivial to solve with the yellow gun, like 2 seconds. So
yeah, maybe it is just possibility, impossibility versus feasibility, you know.
The fundamental thing that I don't understand, that I never really got a grasp on, is what makes bricks disappear.
Oh, like when you...
So there was that there was that puzzle where you had
I never
was like
really
lighting,
figured that
lighting
out
lighting the fuse. Mm-hmm. And
I just had to try a bunch of different times because I never knew what was going to happen when I pulled a brick out of the middle of a cluster of bricks.
The one that I had problems with that with was Too Many Lasers, I think it was called. It's that doorway that's just beams horizontally and vertically.
I mean, I eventually just made enough bricks to cover all of the lasers.
My encountering that was before I figured out that you could make
your own
bricks.
Me too, but my solving it was after I figured out. Once it gets to the point where it teaches you how to basically manufacture new bricks once you've got at least 8 bricks, then that just fundamentally changes the game. Like, figuring that out, and then realizing, like, oh, this was being hinted at really, really heavily by these...
That was what I was talking about last week when I was talking about the realization that the properties of blocks are inherent to the blocks and not like
the thing in the wall,
the panel, like
the sconce. That's the,
sort of
the panels I mean, are primarily there to make it so you can only interact with the walls in certain spots.
Yeah,
right. And
the if you have the blue gun, you cannot make more blocks. You have to have at least the green gun to make new blocks.
Oh, really?
Because putting 8 blocks in a square.
I don't think I ever encountered
do anything.
I don't think I ever encountered 8 blue blocks.
No, you
at the
do.
Same
like
time.
The first time you have to build a stairway you have to build a little ramp to jump on to get over a thing. There's a line of blue blocks all the way across the hallway that you can pick up. I never bothered to try it. I guess that is a way in which the color of the blocks in the environment matters, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't figure that out until I had the yellow gun. Like, I didn't figure out that you could grow green blocks until after I had the yellow gun, I don't think.
Oh, wow.
I still don't know how much of the game I saw. Right? Like, I do sort of understand how the map works, but
that's the thing that I don't like about it, is that I just haven't, like, I pride myself on having a sense of 3D spaces, but because he fucking... teleports you around the map.
Yeah,
like you just lose all sense of where the fuck you are. It's really frustrating.
I found it easier to deal with because I like basically the way that this game makes you feel trying to navigate 3D spaces is indistinguishable from the way that any video game makes me feel when I try to navigate a 3D space. And so it's like, oh, okay. I guess I must have fucked up somewhere.
I was very frustrated because it was a bunch of like invisible teleports is really kind of shitty if you're trying to actually develop a sense of like a 3D space. So,
well, I mean, maybe you'll be a little bit more understanding of my handicap. No.
Good game. The more I think about it, the more, like, when I was playing it, I was, like, really unsure about whether I was having a good time or not. but, like, in retrospect, the more that I think about it and the more that, like, I've gone back and played another hour or so of it, and it is just really solid. It is a really... Yeah.
I mean, you know, the really insight, the moments of insight are really satisfying. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the endgame sequence of linear puzzles 10 times as much as anything that had happened up until that point.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because once you get there, it's like, all right, it has locked a door behind me, so I have to be able to solve this with what is in my belt.
Yeah.
So, okay, this elevator didn't close off behind me, so I must need to go up there in case something happens.
Yeah.
Down here.
It was essentially the boss fight. Like, here's the bit where you use all the stuff that you've been taught throughout the rest of the game.
Yep. But if you haven't learned everything, is going to make it much harder.
Yeah, I still cannot wrap my head around what makes the blocks disappear. I know how to not make it happen, right? You just sort of come out from the ends, but I don't know where it...
It's like, in some cases... Yeah, like, in some cases...
If you leave a gap, either everything on one side of the gap goes away, or all of it goes away.
Yeah, and like, it seemed like in some situations, you can, like... slice a hunk out so that there would just be a brick hovering, and sometimes that'll make that brick hover and sometimes it'll make it vanish, and I have no idea what the difference is.
When you put down bricks, if you start with a brick, that brick is actually there, and then the line of bricks proceeding out of it is only sort of there. If you cut off any of those bricks, the whole thing will, if you cut off like a brick in the middle of that chain, everything that was one of the pseudo bricks will disappear. And if you destroy the source brick, that whole line will disappear. Because you can, it feels kind of buggy. Because if you make a line of bricks, you can shoot a brick into the middle of that line, and it will appear. It will look like it disappears because it becomes a source brick in the middle of that line. I can't speak with a full authority about how that works because it is a little confusing. What is more confusing to me is how it all how some of the bricks reform. Right, like that's a little weird when you get bricks to disappear and then like a line of them, like if you suck up a line of bricks but then it just comes back.
In the puzzles where you were having to drag things across the different switches inside the mazes, like the primary way that I solved those was by erasing the brick on the end and then erasing the brick right next to it like a second later, so that the one on the end would reform, so and I could like, drag it out of the way real quick.
Chopping the ends off those lines.
I don't understand why that happened. I understand how, you know, I knew how to do it and could keep doing it to solve those puzzles, but I don't get what was going on that made that happen.
Yeah, I don't either, to be honest.
I am confident that there is an explanation for it. I mean, yeah.
There's clearly some sort of algorithm, right? Because it's just done on a computer.
Well, I mean, it's repeatable. And once we figured out that trick, we could do it every time. It's just we're not sure how that trick fits into the logic of the block.
I'm saying it wasn't faked in certain situations to make puzzles soluble.
Right. Yeah, soluble. Right.
Oh, sorry. I rubbed the bottom off the V. Oh, man. I had a lot of fun. I
really great visual aesthetic, too. Well, I thought so.
I had a hard time with it. Like, I had trouble, like, is this a hole or is it just a floor that's the same color? And then sometimes the fact that like, oh, is this a hole or is this a floor that disappeared too fast for me to watch it disappearing? Or is this just a fake wall? And I had a hard time a lot of the time telling whether there was glass in a pane or not.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that made it hard to like survey the situation.
Yeah, the glass could have been a little bit more...
I just shot outlined or blocks whatever. Into things a lot of the time just to see if there was something there.
Yeah. I mean, that's true once you figure out how to get infinite blocks. But before that, it's like, oh, fuck.
Sure.
All right. So I think that what we are going to do is now that we can, our next assignment is going to be System Shock 2 because I really want to play it. We'll probably do 2 weeks because I think that this is going to be one of those Deus Ex. Yeah, I really want to play it and then a week later not play it at all. So that we have nothing to say about it, and then we can do a listener's mail segment. which we're not going to do this week, because we got a shitload of work to do, and we need to get to it. Also, I have to pee, and we're recording this all at one stretch, because Kevin is remote. So, Kevin, if somebody wanted to send us a listener's mail for the week after next, when we may or may not read it, how would they do that?
They could tweet us at VGHotDog, they could email us VGHotDog@gmail.com, or they could check out the forums available at a link via videogameshotdog.com.
All right. That sounds like a thing that they all should do.
Mm-hmm.
I've had fun doing an episode of Video Games Hot Dog with you guys.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Have a great week, everybody.
Goodbye.
See ya.
Her right foot is several bears chasing them.
And I was going to suggest a panzer tank.
Yeah, that would make school children angry. The tank ran over our playground.